The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. A balanced diet is a cookie in each hand. Barbara Johnson. I really don't think I need buns of steel. I'd be happy with buns of cinnamon. Ellen DeGeneres. My dear listeners, as these quotes found on MamaLovesToCook.com indicate, this month's TAL episode is all about food. From Super Bowl feasts to Valentine's sweets to Mardi Gras treats, there are lots of ways Americans celebrate food in the month of February. And who best to explain all about American eating other than self-proclaimed E.T., not a foodie, Jim Gaffigan? Our first few stories today are from his book, Food, A Love Story, copyright 2014. The first chapter, Proud American. Today's stories are from his book, Food, A Love Story, copyright 2014. The first chapter, Proud American. If obesity is an epidemic in America, then what caused it? I can only speak from my own experience, but I will just go out on a limb here and guess it was caused by American eating. I'm very American. I don't mean that in a boastful way. I'm just saying my habits and passions surrounding food are those of a typical American. Not to generalize, but generally, most Americans have an unhealthy relationship with food. Maybe it's the exposure to a lifetime of McDonald's commercials. Maybe our country couldn't handle the post-World War II financial boom. Maybe we are just better than all the other countries at eating. In any case, consuming food of any kind feels a little more important in the United States. We seem to always be eating. If aliens studied Earth, they would come to the conclusion that the United States is somehow consuming food on behalf of other countries. In America, we have gone way beyond sustenance. Eating is an activity. Why don't we get lunch, and then we'll grab some pizza? Most Americans eat constantly. And when we're not eating, we're chewing gum. We are literally practicing eating. We chew gum with a swagger and purpose that says, "Yeah, I got a big meal coming up. I'm training for Thanksgiving." There are many elements that make up the American attitude toward food, but some are consistent. There always seems to be an unending dissatisfaction with, and constant need to improve upon, the status quo of food. Americans are never satisfied when it comes to a food item. The hamburger could never remain just the hamburger. You know what would be good on this hamburger? A ham sandwich. Instead of a bun, let's use two donuts. That way, we can have it for breakfast. Look out, McGriddle. Here comes the donut ham hamburger. I came up with this silly concept for my 2006 comedy special, Beyond the Pale. And then in 2012, Dunkin' Donuts made me a sort of food prophet by introducing the very food item that I had hyperbolically predicted. I wasn't surprised, really. Dunkin' Donuts is only responding to the ongoing public desire for innovation and variety in our food. It's the new American manifest destiny. We are the ones who, for some reason, needed a potato chip that tastes like steak, and Jim Beam jalapeno-flavored sunflower seeds. The variety of flavors is only matched by the speed at which we need them. Of course, when the word fast is associated with American eating, it is the opposite of the word fast as it relates to abstinence from food. When people in other parts of the world hear the term food fast, they envision a time of spiritual and physical cleansing. I hear food fast, and I envision a drive-thru. Americans want our food fast. That's why those fast food value meals are so successful. It's less the value and more the speed. You just have to say a number, 2, and your food is on its way. Soon, you won't have to speak a word. It will just be a noise, yeah, and your meal will be placed in front of you. Fast and easy is the American way. We start indoctrinating our children into this mindset at a very early age. My children eat this yogurt that comes in an astronaut tube that they just squeeze, and the entire serving of yogurt is expelled into their mouths. We don't want them to waste their time lifting up a cumbersome spoon. They are even starting to package baby food in a squeeze bag. I heard soon they are coming out with a variety of kids' foods where these squeeze bags come with an elastic strap, so they can just put them around their heads and walk around all day wearing a squeeze feed bag. Why should they even have to lift their hands to their mouths? What a waste of energy. Let's keep it fast and easy. I am a fast eater. I normally am the first one to finish eating my entire plate of food at a restaurant, and then I have to just sit there and stare at everyone who has barely unfolded his or her napkin. I never know what to say. Do you think they're going to bring back that basket of bread? My wife likes to pause before the meals with our kids and say grace. While I think this is a great opportunity for our children to learn to appreciate the gifts that God has given them, I view grace as kind of the on your mark, get set, and the amen as the go. I am pretty sure that's the way God intended it. The faster we eat, the fatter we get. Statistics show that the amount of money spent on weight loss programs in the United States alone is much larger than the amount of money it would take to solve the world's hunger problem. When you watch late-night television, it becomes abundantly clear that as a culture, we are struggling with our weight and have little desire to make any real effort to remedy the situation. The exercise equipment and weight loss techniques sold late at night emphasize painless alternatives to actually eating less. Machines and routines that only take moments out of our busy lives between meals are constantly touted. I have even seen a late-night commercial for a pulsating belt that works your abs while you watch television. All these weight loss techniques point to the fact that we can't stop eating. There are diet programs where all your meals are mailed to your home. How absurd! We can't even be trusted to go out and buy the food we know we should eat. You'll just screw it up. I'll do it. We are totally out of control. We're a country that loves to eat so much that instead of learning how to eat less, or honestly, exercising, we find ways around it, like wiring our mouths shut and undergoing surgeries in which our stomachs are stapled smaller. I don't want to do something barbaric like exercising, so I'm just going to have someone vacuum the fat out of my body. Instead of eating less or spending money on get-thin-quick schemes, I have just accepted the fact that I, like most Americans, also have a totally unhealthy relationship with food, and therefore, as a result, I'm overweight. As mentioned earlier, the meal isn't over for me until I feel sick. Instead of food giving me energy, I am always tired after I eat, which explains why I am always tired. I go to the gym just so I will stop eating for an hour, which I believe is the American form of fasting. Jim Gaffigan explains all about the great American phenomenon, the all-you-can-eat buffet. The chapter title, The Buffet Rule. If anything defines American eating, it is the quantity of food we consume. This would explain why the all-you-can-eat buffet is such an American phenomenon, and it makes perfect sense that it started in Las Vegas. Some of the most amazing restaurants in the world are in Las Vegas, but the real specialty is the all-you-can-eat buffet. Buffets are as common in Vegas as glitter and regrettable behavior. The Vegas casino buffets are expansive and ridiculous. In other words, completely American. You can get sushi, mac and cheese, and donuts all in the same meal. God bless America. One of the main reasons that the all-you-can-eat buffet is a perfect fit for casinos is because the all-you-can-eat buffet is the food equivalent of gambling. And, like all other forms of institutional gambling, it's rigged for the house. The all-you-can-eat buffets always feel like a challenge. All you can eat. The unspoken rule of the all-you-can-eat buffet is that you must eat the food value of more than the cost of the buffet. My wife, Jeannie, finds this approach ridiculous. But then again, she married me, so she doesn't have the best judgment anyway. If the buffet is $20, you must eat at least $20 worth of food. If you eat $21 worth of food, you make money, right? It's a rule everyone knows. Eating your money's worth at the buffet is a rule that should be known as the buffet rule. But apparently this term was already used for some tax theory proposed in 2011 that has absolutely nothing to do with buffets. I mean, where are our government's priorities, really? I'm not saying my interpretation of the buffet rule is a wise one. I've never learned my lesson. I always approach a buffet with the same bluster. All I can eat for $20? Ha ha! This place is going to lose so much money! Unfortunately, after half an hour, I'm always uncomfortably full and mumbling, "Let's get out of here. This place is trying to hurt people. Why did I do this to myself?" It's the overeating equivalent of losing your shirt at the craps table. It's dangerous. The all-you-can-eat title is especially hazardous for someone like me, who likes to follow directions. When I approach a buffet, aside from seeing it as a challenge, there is a compliant part of me that hears all you can eat and says, "Okay, I will try my best. I don't want to let you down, buffet." The assumption is that I can control myself, that I understand self-restraint and portion control, and that I am some kind of nutritional scientist or an adult. There is something very American about the term all-you-can-eat. Do you love your country? Prove it. Let's see all you can eat. Sometimes I hear other words in the phrase emphasized. It's all you can eat, not all you want to eat. There's part of me that is relieved that the can part is never enforced. I could see trying to leave a buffet only to encounter some big bouncer. Hey, where do you think you're going? Get back here. But I don't want any more food. Look, chubby, no one said this was an all-you-want-to-eat buffet. It's all you can eat. Read the sign. I've seen your stand-up. You can eat more. Really, what most of us need is an all-you-should-eat buffet. Wait a minute there, fella. Here's your brunch. 1 apple and 50 sit-ups. No matter how unusual, extreme, or unhealthy, Jim Gaffigan is never surprised by American eating. Well, almost never. Next up, we hear an example of what does manage to shock the anti-foodie foodie. The chapter, Cup of Gravy. I suppose I've become desensitized to the level of unhealthy eating in America. An 80-ounce soda, all-you-can-eat buffets, and a Wendy's triple only seem like logical options to me. I love the rare moments when I'm truly surprised by American eating. A while ago, I was back in my hometown walking around the Kmart, or, as we called it, the mall. You can typically find just about anything you need in one of these big box stores like Walmart and Kmart. What I especially love about Kmart is the ambiance. I always feel like I've entered a store that was just attacked by a flash mob. Everything always looks and feels a little disheveled. There will be some random empty shelf. There's always a huge corner display tower of sale products that looks like it will collapse on you if you breathe on it. There will be a broken jar in one aisle and an abandoned sock in the next. The selection and layout suggest that this might not be the ideal place to buy a suit or use a public restroom. Anyway, on this fine day, I was looking for diapers when I saw a 70-year-old man walking around the Kmart drinking something I realized later was a cup of KFC gravy. Now, in full disclosure, I love gravy. Who doesn't, really? It's gravy, after all. But I've never considered gravy a beverage. Even in my most private moments with gravy, I've never contemplated taking a swig. This is coming from someone who drank a product called Yoo-hoo on many occasions as a teenager. The thing I found most impressive was that not only was this stranger drinking gravy, he also wasn't even trying to hide it. When I first spotted the stranger, I saw the KFC styrofoam cup, saw him take a drink, and assumed, well, obviously this guy is not drinking gravy. Then I encountered him again standing in front of me in the checkout line. It was at that moment I saw the thick brown liquid in the cup and confirmed that it was, in fact, a cup of KFC gravy he was drinking. And then, almost as if to prove a point, he turned around and took a sip right in front of me. Our eyes met, and he gave me a warm Midwestern smile, as if to say, "Hey, how's it going?" I nodded and said hello, and was only a bit more than slightly tempted to exclaim, "You realize you're drinking gravy, right?" I don't know what the events were that led up to this stranger drinking the cup of gravy in that Kmart. I like to think he walked into KFC with the intention of drinking gravy. Maybe his order was simple. "Yeah, I'll have the large mashed potatoes and gravy, and hold the mashed potatoes. Maybe, in order to avoid judgment or scorn, he ordered the mashed potatoes, got the gravy on the side, and just threw the mashed potatoes away. Or maybe he really could have cared less what anyone thought, which is more likely, since he seemed like a proud gravy drinker, greeting the cashier while she scanned his heart medication. I'm no health nut, but I can only imagine what this guy's next medical checkup was like. I picture a doctor in a white coat glancing down at a chart as he walks into an examination room with our gravy drinker sitting on the examination table. The doctor would then tilt his head to the right, perplexed by the results on the chart. Doctor, Mr. Jones, I've got your cholesterol levels here. Beat. Okay, are you aware your blood is not moving? Gravy drinker nods. Doctor, this is kind of a strange question. You haven't been drinking gravy, have you? Because based on the test results, you're like 90% meat byproduct. Gravy drinker nods. Doctor, we're going to have to register you with the government. I guessed the age of our gravy drinker to be around 70, but I have no idea how old he was or how long he had been drinking gravy. Maybe he was younger. Maybe gravy drinking is one of those rapid aging behaviors, like smoking. Or maybe he was an even older guy, and the gravy drinking habit had plumped out his wrinkles so he actually looked younger. I suppose his unique consumption of his gravy cup was voluntary, but I honestly don't know. Maybe his wife was just trying to kill him. Gravy drinker. Honey, I'm going to Kmart. Wife. Well, why don't you have a cup of gravy? Gravy drinker. Well, I guess I could. Wife. And why don't you sign this additional life insurance policy? Gravy drinker. Boy, you love buying life insurance. American humans are not the only ones who love food. American dogs love food, too. In fact, our next story illustrates how much dogs love to eat with their humans. From the book, Sorry I Pooped in Your Shoe and Other Heartwarming Letters from Doggy, written by Jeremy Greenberg, copyright 2011, the letter from T-Bone, age 15 months, R.E., studies show that families who eat together are happier. Dear pack leader, quick question. When you were growing up, did your mommy make you eat on a welcome mat by yourself in a corner of the house? Bet not. She probably set your bowl on the table next to the other pack members. So why do you make me eat alone on the floor like I'm some kind of dog? I love you. And I'm a pack animal. I'm not some antisocial cat or serial killer. I would very much appreciate it if you placed my bowl next to yours. It's important to my self-esteem. Plus, doggies who don't get to eat with humans are at greater risk of becoming alpha-holics. So please, let me sit with you during dinner, or I'll spend the rest of my life thinking that I'm just some pet. Love, T-Bone. Okay, so when it comes to dogs, the term food may be a little relative, such as this next story in which our little furry friend suggests a reasonable reward for helping their human. Also from the book, Sorry I Pooped in Your Shoe and Other Heartwarming Letters from Doggy, the letter from Suki, age 5, R.E., I heard there was a reward for a lost shoe. Dear Pack Leader, I couldn't help but notice you running around the house frantically looking for one of your $200 running shoes. Perhaps I can be of assistance. I saw the shoe buried under my dog toys. In situations like these, it's best not to ask questions and just be grateful to have the shoe back. Unfortunately, I can't guarantee its condition. When shoes that smell so scrumptiously like pack leaders' feet are abducted, they often have some bite or chew marks. If you find that the shoe is damaged beyond use, I will graciously accept it as my reward for returning it to you. Love, Suki. And lastly, even dogs love bacon, but they try not to take their humans' bacon if they can help it, or if they might get caught doing it. The next story from the book, Sorry I Pooped in Your Shoe, and Other Heartwarming Letters from Doggy, the letter from Babe, age 2 years, R.E., Let's Play Steal the Bacon. Dear Pack Leader, seriously, I thought this was one of my beggin' strips. Whoops! Honest mistake. I know that I am only allowed to eat from your plate when you're in the other room. But here you are, right in front of me, and boy do I almost have egg on my face. This is really just a big misunderstanding. I would never take something that I thought was yours if I thought you'd catch me. In the future, I will try to do a better job listening for the difference between the sound your shoes make on the kitchen linoleum and on the family room's hardwood. I apologize for being caught stealing your bacon, and I promise not to get caught in the future. Love, Babe. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please be sure to tune in next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. Our number one more time is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.